You are listening to
Rural Voices,
the Rural Youth Europe podcast.
Hello and welcome back to Rural Voices, the Rural Youth Europe podcast. And we are here in Brussels for the final Co-Criado conference. We are nearing the end of this project, which started back in 2021. The main aim of Co-Criado was to co-create innovative solutions that shorten food supply chains and rebalance the position of the farmer. Before we get into the episode, let's have a listen down memory lane, because we have been following the Co-Criado project on this podcast from the very start. In this time, we've built an ambassador network of 40 young people, and over the last few years, we have held training events to support this network. We started things off with a training session in Brussels, which focused on sharing good practices and how to initiate seed initiatives.
Everyone brings different troubles, different solutions, and when we work together, when we co-create the best solution from every profile, from every different background, I think we can really succeed and come with an idea that could work.
Then we were in Pamplona, Spain, where we focused more in depth on the actual seed initiatives that were being co-created by the ambassadors.
Every ambassador here shares this dream. They all want to change the food system. It's quite a big dream. So if you want to change big things, have big dreams, then you need some kind of structure.
Our third training was in Riga, Latvia, where we produced a podcast co-hosted by the ambassadors themselves, and they talked about how they are campaigning for change in the context of the Co-Criado project.
This is like the major strength of Co-Criado, is that it brings so many people, so many partners, and it's a nice place to share knowledge, but also to co-create.
And finally, earlier this year, we also held a policy workshop where we unveiled our new project policy brief. And I spoke to Ricard Ramon from DG Agri, a department of the European Commission.
We are in a very complex moment where we need to build bridges between producers and consumers. Mm-hmm. And in that process, young people are central.
All of those episodes are still available to listen to on the Rural Youth Europe website, so you can get a real flavour of how this project has developed over the past 3 years through the voices of the ambassadors and the partners. But we have now come to the end of the project and we are here at the final conference. This event is an opportunity to present the results that the project has obtained over the last few years. And in this episode, I'm here at the conference in Brussels, and I'm going to be catching up with one of the project coordinators, Tessa, as well as Michaelis from the Baltic Study Centre. I also have a fascinating chat with Marco from the Joseph Stefan Institute in Slovenia about public procurement and how the public sector can provide a huge opportunity for local producers. Make sure you keep listening to the end, where I'll also be catching up with Rural Youth Europe's project manager, Thomas, to hear his final thoughts and to explain how all of you can learn from the project and access all of the toolkits that have been created. Here's a taste of what's to come.
This feeling of group, this feeling of being part of something, I would define this Co-Criado project as inspiring.
I feel overwhelmed. Like it's been a roller coaster.
We see here that for some of these young people, dreams come true. So I would say, spread the word, communicate with other people, and don't be afraid to dream.
You are listening to
Rural Voices,
the Rural Youth Europe podcast.
Okay, so Tessa, project coordinator for Co-Criado, we are at the end. It's the final conference. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling glad. I'm feeling especially, I think, grateful for working together with such a nice team of people. It's always a surprise a bit when 3 years and a half ago we started, you have young umbrella organizations. That was completely new for me. When I started in 2014 with European projects, they were almost all universities. No umbrella organizations, no young people. And now it was exciting to see what's going to come out of this.
And what are some of your key takeaways? I mean, it's been almost 3 years, hasn't it? What are some of your key takeaways when you look back at what we've been doing over the last few years?
One takeaway is for sure that is a very good idea to bring in young people, motivated young people into European projects, because they look further into the future than maybe older people do. I don't say you don't need older senior people, yeah. Not at all. But young people, they look at different ways, sometimes very creative. Sometimes that brings in things that you say, well, what's going to come out of this? But listen to their concerns, listen to what they want to achieve, and then think together, how can we try to bundle forces and move it into the right directions? Yeah.
And we've built this ambassador network, haven't we? All these young people from all over Europe, from all different parts of the food supply chain. What are your reflections on that, on the building of that network?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to get pathetic, but I was really like touched emotionally almost when one of these young farmers this morning said, well, this really changed my life. Yeah. That's nice to see that it gives some, even if it is just a little bit of seed money, mm-hmm. to make young people's dream come true, to try something out. And sometimes it is just about guiding them, giving them some consultancy. And these are things we really can do. And it's nice to see that comes out. It's the seed money for individuals and also the connection between people. I love to see the connection between people all across Europe. And I'm sure that this connection will stay even when the project ends.
I don't know whether it's me being pathetic, but earlier in one of the sessions, one of the ambassadors said, this isn't the end, this is actually where the hard work begins. And I did get goosebumps from that, because you could just see that they were just so empowered by what has been happening. And yeah, the hard work's only just
begun. Yeah, in most European projects, let's be honest, the money is over, you report, you do the final reporting, you motivate that towards the commission, and you're proud that you've reached the milestones and you've submitted the deliverables. But then it ends mostly, or a new project starts. And here you feel that people are connected, and they will be connected in the future. They will search for them, for each other. They will learn from each other. And that's really nice.
And the whole point of this project is all about rebalancing the position of the farmer in the food supply chain. With that in mind, finally, the people that listen to this podcast, a lot of young farmers, young people across Rural Youth Europe, with that in mind, sort of, what is your sort of final words to young people listening to this in regards to that original mission that Cocorado set out?
I would say to these young people, connect. Don't be afraid to build out your network, to ask other people, academics, non-academics, to help them. Because we see here that for some of these young people, dreams come true. It's not going to happen if you stay within your own small bubble. You need to connect, you need to link up with organizations like Rural Europe, like Mijarek, like Seja, but also academics. They can really help you, and they're eager to help young people. So I would say, spread the word, communicate with other people, and don't be afraid to dream.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
With great pleasure.
Okay, so Michaelis, this feels like deja vu, because it was a couple years ago, we were here in Brussels. You were actually the first person that I interviewed for the first Cocorado podcast episode. It feels like a while ago now, that first training in Brussels. How do you feel now that we've come to the end of the project?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me back. But getting back to your question, I feel overwhelmed. Like it's been a roller coaster. And I remember when we actually got the news that this project is approved, I was sort of scared and sort of asked myself, what have I gotten myself into? And then sort of, you always, when you sort of are exposed to these really tremendous tasks that you have to engage with, and that seems like larger than yourself, then you are sort of questioning, can you do it? And this was one of these cases where you sort of read what you have described, and sort of there is this text saying you have to develop ambassadors network. It's if you just sit there and wonder, is it actually possible? And then looking back, you just have this sense of pride and joy that, yeah, we did it. And actually, it wasn't just ticking the box. It actually, we did something that we can be proud of. So I feel probably joy, but also it's ending. So yeah, it's a strange feeling that we won't have these meetings and that we don't have any more possibility to run this network. So.
And looking back over the last few years, we've had free trainings, we've had workshops, we've created a toolkit. What is your highlight looking back? Do you have any specific highlights?
Well, I guess the whole process is my highlight, because it's sort of, for me, it's all together. But I think I realized that we have done something special when I started noticing that people are actually replicating what we are doing in other projects, and they are saying, well, we will do the same thing. And then you say, okay, so we have been noticed and that we are doing apparently something right if people are saying this thing works. So I suppose my highlight is not so much with the project, but just seeing that people recognize our effort and that they see that this actually could be a model that could be replicated.
Yeah. Would you do anything differently if you were to do it all over again?
Well, the thing is that I don't think that we have done things in one uniform way. Sort of, as I have been stressing a number of occasions, for us, I think part of success is that we have been learning all through the process. Mm-hmm. And if you look at each sort of, we had three trainings, and if you look at each separate training, each of them is completely different from the other two. And the reason for that is because we conducted a survey with ambassadors, what they like, what they want after each of the trainings. And we conducted a number of engagements with project partners. We tested everything we could with practice partners, with ambassadors, sort of with everybody. And then sort of you are constantly moving, you are constantly learning. And on one hand, that's the painful thing of that, because you want to be at some point in this area where you feel secure about what you are doing. On the other hand, I think you cannot just take one model and say that this works. We will continue in this way. You have to really listen to the people you are working with and have to sort of answer to the expectations that they have. And therefore, I'm not sure that there is one way sort of that we can change. We are just sort of, it was a dynamic process.
Yeah. And finally, just some final words. For sort of a lot of people listening to this podcast are young people from across Europe who are interested in the countryside and farming and food. From what you've learned over the last couple of years, and maybe they felt inspired by some of the ambassadors, what are your final words to young people working within that space?
One thing that we have learned through this training program is that on one hand, you have this complex knowledge that's coming from the projects and from various European projects. And the thing is that if you are a curious person who is really interested in how to shape food systems, probably you have read some of that and you already know something. And you are probably, if you will look around, you will find even more. And having a program that teaches you is nice. That sort of pushes you in a direction, but then on the other hand, you can do it on your own. You don't necessarily need to have this guidance. With that being said, it's good to have guidance. But then I think what I sort of came as a surprise to me, I knew that networking is important, but I was never really sort of convinced on how extremely important it is. But then seeing how ambassadors benefit from just from the fact of being together and together exploring this new knowledge, that I felt was one of the things, and I would encourage people to sort of engage with that, sort of not just do things on their own, but look for a team and look for a team of like-minded people. And then the second thing that technically you know that, but then it's sort of surprising when you see it on the spot, and that is how diverse Europe is. Sort of, you expect sort of, quite often we just use notions like food systems and food chains, and then it seems that everything is similar all across Europe. And then when we had these trainings across Europe and we sort of were looking for local examples, on a number of occasions people just came to me and said, well, it's really nice to see that there is this different way how things can be done. And I think that's the second thing, that one is try to build a network and do it in a network. Second, well, don't be limited by your box. Look around and you will find that there are other ways how to do things.
Thank you very much, Michaelis. It's been a brilliant working with you over the last couple of years. And thank you for joining me on the podcast again.
Thank you.
My name is Marko Debeljak and I'm coming from Jozef Stefan Institute, Slovenia, where I work in the Department of Knowledge Technologies, where we try to use mostly AI to extract information out of data and also knowledge out of human beings. And then we use this knowledge to construct decision support systems.
Brilliant. And what's your involvement with the Cocoriado project?
So since I work with agricultural sector for almost 20 years on application of decision support systems, so we also cover here in this project issues related to decision support systems. So among them, the development of decision support system for procurement officers is the one of the objectives which we follow here.
Yeah. and access to public procurement. Why is that so significant, particularly in the context of the project?
So if you look at it from the project perspective, you see that here we work with enthusiastic, creative, mostly young people who would like to introduce something new in the field of how the food is produced and how the food is actually channeled to the consumers. In most of the cases, they have huge problems with reaching the market. However, there is also a niche which could be covered by them and which could public also help them. I mean, public institutions could help them. These are public procurements. Public procurement has to serve public needs. Therefore, mostly municipalities need to have strong interest that local producers have ability to sell and to supply local consumers. Here we are talking about public sector. And to do this, they have to facilitate this process and they have ability to facilitate this because those who actually evaluate first, who write the tender, and then those who actually evaluate the offer, of course, they can select them on a not just on the basis of price, but also on the basis of other criteria which are very relevant and needed in the phase of transition to sustainable agriculture. For instance, use of energy. So they can require that the food is produced on a really sustainable way from the energy point of view. From the social point of view, that they employ local people and that they provide salary to local people. Yeah. Then education, it means that if you take schools that kids know about from where the food is coming from, then several things where the price is also just one among selection criteria. And if you go to the legislation, you see that price is not the only one or the obligatory only one criteria which has to be respected when you select offers. But there are very many opportunities, at least when we talk about green public procurement. There is a chance how the local municipality can support and stimulate those who select offers, that they really apply this multi-criteria evaluation. And then through this multi-criteria evaluation, local producers, one of them is also short supply chain. Yeah. And this short supply chain, both in terms of distance and in terms of time. Yeah. And this gives, this actually rises chances that local producers will be chosen for supplying, for instance, schools or hospitals or elderly homes with food.
Yeah, exactly. And why do you think it is so beneficial to local municipalities to support this kind of multi-criteria process and be more likely to choose local producers? What benefits are there?
When you make a linkage between local producers and local consumers, then you trigger several synergies in local environment. First one is that public money goes to the, let's say, private sector from where the local producers are coming from, and this private sector gets stronger. It means that they can expand their production, they can diversify production, they can employ new workers, and this actually makes them stronger in terms that they can start to supply also private sector. Yeah. And by that, the money also starts to flow from private sectors to these innovative young farmers. And on the other side, when the local food comes to the school kitchen starts to actually explore all possibilities, possibilities about what is possible to cook out of the local ingredients. And this increases creativity in the kitchen, among kitchen workers, because kitchen workers are in most cases the worst paid workers. And this actually brings them additional money, brings them additional satisfaction. And then you also include kids. And through that, they are learned and they actually started to be bounded to the local environment through food. Mm-hmm. And by that, the school itself increases its sustainability performance. And also the public sector starts to be more sustainable. And this gives local municipality an option to apply, for instance, for regional or national subsidies for the transition to both sustainable agriculture and sustainable public sector. Therefore, yeah, linkage, this small but innovative, creative farmers with public sector, with kitchens in public sector, has tremendous impact on the entire local community.
Yeah, and I can see how that could have that impact and that there is a clear opportunity within the public sector to shorten those food supply chains and create that opportunity for farmers, which is obviously what Cocoriado is all about. Now that we're nearing the end of this project, what is your main reflection on it? What kind of impact do you think it's had?
I have to say that Cocoriado opened very many new perspectives during this time. And surprisingly, I didn't have such high expectations at the beginning, but now I'm surprised when I see how well this concept which we developed is accepted by local communities. I'm coming from Slovenia, and there we talk with one actually municipality called Laško, which really support, and they go in this direction also through the local action group, where we succeeded that this one of the strategies, also the strategy which actually focused on the improvement of the local food production. And there is another new municipality, Ajdovščina, which would also like to introduce this concept, and they approached to us by themselves. So when you talk with local municipality and when you ask them, do you know where does money flow from schools and public procurement, they don't have any idea. And then when you show them, and we use just data from National Statistical Office, they are, I mean, they shut down because they are astonished how big proportion of money is actually flowing from the municipality, also from the country.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, when they see what this money could make through this synergy, so the first estimation is that 1 euro of public money, which is invested in the pavement of the locally produced food, could generate up to 7 euros
wow.
in local environment through these synergies which I mentioned.
Yeah.
And when mayors, for instance, see this, they said, okay, let's try, we would like to do this. And this is actually the legacy of Cocoriado. And also I think this is the excellent case how this communication and supply action, among which is this project. This is a successful story, I would say.
An incredibly successful story, and it's brilliant to hear it on the podcast. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Okay, so Thomas, we are here in Brussels for the final conference of Cocoriado. We're here at the end of the project. How do you feel?
It is mixed feelings that I'm sense now, because we will be able to see all the output and results of Cocoriado, all the work developed from this 3 years, the work done with the 40 ambassadors that we selected. A little bit sad because the project is ending, but I'm pretty confident that we plant a seed and that we get a lot of results in the future, and that we will accomplish more than we proposed ourselves at the beginning of the project.
At this final conference, there's been a lot of talks about what have been the deliverables to this project, what has been created, what can people use moving forward, and the partners have created this toolkit, haven't they? Using all the things that have been developed during the trainings and throughout the project. Can you tell me a little bit more about the toolkit and what's available to people?
Yes, so along the project we have developed together with the ambassadors and their insights and learnings, a lot of materials. One of them, the Food System Innovator Toolkit. It is a document that can be found in the website. It will be available for free for anyone that wants to consult it. It is pretty user-friendly. It is a handy tool structured by five chapters, important chapters, from developing networks with the examples of the ambassador network that we had developed in Cocoriado, also another chapter on getting inspired from examples, already good practices from other regions, other sectors that we can incorporate in the food system. Then also some tips, some practical steps on communicating, in this case communicating change, so different ways to approach different dissemination streams as mass media, social media, useful insights on how to develop a communication plan. And without forgetting the engaging with the policymakers, that's another chapter that we had produced, where you can get some knowledge on how to approach them for specific streams of communication. And if you're more business oriented, we also developed a chapter on develop an idea into a business, where you can find some nice business tips so that you can develop your idea into a business. Really, yeah. So a lot to see.
Exactly. That toolkit is absolutely packed full of stuff. Loads of useful information, best practice. There's even a little bit about how to make a podcast as well, isn't there?
Yes, I heard.
So you can have a read of that. If you were to sell the toolkit in just a couple sentences, summarize it, why should people have a look?
I would say that the toolkit, you'll have anything that you'll need to really be a food system innovator. So if you add it on you, if you are keen and willing to promote change towards a more sustainable food system, you'll find everything that you need on the toolkit. It's like, I would say, besides being very user-friendly, because we have like images, roadmaps, so that can people really understand simply the idea of what they are trying to do and how to do it. I will summarize it like the ideal toolkit, the ideal tool to really promote this change and to grow up from a food system wannabe innovator to really a food system innovator.
Okay, sold. I'm going to go have a read of it. Finally, what is your highlight? Looking back through your work with the Cocoriado project now that we finished, what are some of your key takeaways and highlights?
So first of all, I would like to express that I felt inspired by all our ambassadors. They are very active. They are very present in their communities. It's really nice to see people working this way, learning with them, trying to get some key takeaways also from their experience, because these are people that we put together so that we can achieve a purpose. And I believe it had exceeded the expectations. I would highlight for me the ambassador training in Riga, the third one, because it has a lot of different topics from communication, from developing the SHEED initiatives into business models. So it has it all. And I believe since it was the third training and the final one, that the ambassadors were really trying to take the most out of it and really enjoy it, not only for the work part, but only for this feeling of group, this feeling of being part of something. And yeah, that was really nice. And it was I would define this Cocoriado project as inspiring.
What a brilliant way to finish. Thank you so much, Thomas. It's been a lot of fun working on this project with you. Hopefully many more to come.
Yes, stay tuned.
So there we go. We are at the end of this year's final conference, and it has been brilliant to reflect on what this project has achieved over the last few years. In the episode description of this podcast, we'll put up a link to the Cocoriado website, where you will find all the documents and toolkits that you will need to learn more. There is an amazing collection of practical tools, useful tips, and sources of inspiration to support innovation towards reconnecting consumers and producers. It's well worth having a look. Before the project finishes, we will have one final podcast episode focusing on the future of the network and the ambassadors themselves. In the meantime, make sure you're following the Cocoriado social media channels for all of the final updates.
You are listening to.
You are listening to.
You are listening to.
Rural Voices.
The Rural Youth Europe Podcast.